Hello, everyone. This is Cheryl at the Talking Information Center. Thanks so much for joining me. Today is Thursday, August 20th, 2026. I'm reading from the Providence Journal. The first article is entitled, Prying Eyes, a flock camera that is mounted on the intersection of Broad and Exchange Streets in Pawtucket. A South Kingstown official wondered about the capacities of automated license plate reading cameras in her community. Her question involved a very old form of public messaging, bumper stickers. The councilwoman understood that devices supplied to local police by flock safety capture an image of the license plate as well as the rear area, bumper included, of each passing automobile. And she wondered, if she gave Sow a Seed bumper stickers to the members of her gardening organization, could the license plate reading system identify everybody in the group whose vehicle had that bumper sticker? The question itself and the answer from Flock's Senior Public Affairs Director, Trevor Chandler, showed just one of many complexities that many Rhode Islanders are wrestling with as they try to understand the impacts on privacy and civil rights posed by the powerful policing tool. Questions about controls over the data gathered by automated license plate reading cameras and the sharing of that information between police. We do not sell data. We do not own the data. The town owns the data. Trevor Chandler's Flock Senior Public Affairs Director, organizes have been polarizing issues in Rhode Island in recent weeks, as several towns have reevaluated their relationship with Flock. On Tuesday, August 18th, Governor Dan McKee called on towns to pause installation of new cameras, saying the state police would do the same. He also asked Rhode Island State Police Colonel Darnell Weaver, director of the Rhode Island's Department of Public Safety, to work with appropriate stakeholders to review automated license plate reading camera technology and provide recommendations for statewide standards and controls. Supporters of the license plate reading systems have argued that the configuration of the systems and safeguards governing their use greatly limit when and how often police actually see the data that the devices gather. While Flock license plate readers collect data around the clock, supporters say the actual privacy exposure is quite limited. Built-in controls and protocols ensure that police only work with a small portion of the actual data, they say. Police investigators only work with and see the data that's potentially relevant to legitimate public safety situations, proponents say. Also, regular oversight audits detect improper use and lead to discipline, they say. That structure mirrors the way authorities protect other highly regulated databases, such as Rhode Island's driver license data, from police misuse. So while significant amounts of data are gathered, the argument goes, strict controls on when and precisely how police can assess it protect privacy. So, can flock cameras track bumper stickers? It's not a simple yes or no. The question put to Chandler in South Kingstown on July 27th was, so, if somebody said, I want to know everybody that has a particular bumper sticker on their car, would this information be findable? Chandler's answer wasn't as simple as a yes or no. So there's two answers, replied Chandler. No, he said. The specific flock system under contract in South Kingstown at that time, prior to the town's termination of the agreement, did not provide a function that would let police run a search for vehicles decorated with a particular bumper sticker. However, the local system did have some bumper sticker capability, he said. For example, in a hit-and-run scenario where someone noticed the suspect vehicle, a red pickup, had some kind of a bumper sticker on it. Police could search for instances where a red truck with a bumper sticker had passed by. In most, if not all, Rhode Island communities using the system, police would need to perform such a search within 30 days. After 30 days, the photographic data gathered by the system is deleted. Chandler mentioned that FLOC does offer a feature that allows police to search for a specific type of bumper sticker, but that function wasn't available to South Kingstown officers. You do not have what's called the license plate reader free form, which allows for a text description saying, "I'm looking for this type of bumper sticker," said Chandler. So that does exist. South Kingstown does not have that program. FLOC's free form offering. FLOC's website says that its free form search function lets authorized teams search enabled video and license plate reader, abbreviated LPR data, using natural language descriptions. Even with the right setup, a police investigator would need a legitimate reason to justify searching for vehicles with a "sow a seed" bumper stickers. But the free form feature shows how the system's power has grown since Cranston and some other Rhode Island cities were the first to empty FLOC technology in 2021. It also illustrates how particular contracts and FLOC setups can vary widely between different communities, even within Rhode Island. How do police share the information gathered by FLOC cameras? How does the police agency know when and where a license plate of interest has been detected in other cities, towns, or in another state? Can a department from out of the state access data gathered by a Rhode Island-based FLOC camera? That information is based on the different types of searches police can carry out and each town's specific contract. The scope of an agency's searches within FLOC is governed by information sharing arrangements. According to Cranston's police chief, Colonel Michael J. Winquist, who was the first police leader to introduce FLOC in Rhode Island. In one common search scenario, which takes place soon after a crime, police might only have the make and color of a suspect's vehicle. On request, the system can detail when local devices have read the license plate of any vehicle matching the color and make. It then gives the place, time, and the license plate information for each hit. What investigators learn when they run each vehicle's actual plate through traditional data sources, such as a driver's license, databases, might or might not make them even more interested in a certain vehicle. If police want to find, say, a white car that was suspiciously active at a certain time and place, the FLOC data can often identify not just one car, but an entire group of vehicles for detectives to investigate. Recently, in Woonsocket, soon after the suspicious death of a pregnant 29-year-old woman, Gabriella Fajillo, police investigators became interested in specific vehicles as they tried to track down the suspect, William Santiago Ramos. FLOC data helped investigators find the vehicles, which led to promising information on Ramos's location in River Islands Park, and paved the way for his arrest, according to Woonsocket Police Chief Thomas Oates III. Prior to FLOC, police might know the make and color of certain vehicles, but they wouldn't have more detailed plate information or alerts about where the vehicle of interest had been lately. Rhode Island police say that FLOC is helping them focus on promising suspects faster than before. But the technology is also generating more leads on vehicles overall. That translates into more innocent people to check out and to eliminate as suspects. National Lookup police departments that have opted in to Flock's National Lookup feature can also run a search to see if a plate has been read by devices in other communities across the United States that have also opted for National Lookup, said Chandler. Cranston has opted in, said Winquist. This National Lookup arrangement does not let counterpart agencies out of state that lack plate information search for a vehicle based on criteria, such as color, make, or the presence of a bumper sticker or a roof rack, said Winquist. Individual agencies can also enter into arrangements that make local data available to help other agencies carry out more expansive types of searches, said Winquist. Chandler emphasized that Flock leaves those decisions to each community. Flock does not own the data collected by its devices. In the case of South Kingstown, when it was using Flock, the town owned the information gathered by the devices, Chandler said. We do not sell data. We do not own the data, said Chandler. The town owns the data. Furthermore, Flock will never share data on your behalf. Each particular town and city determines what data sharing arrangements it will opt into, he said. In South Kingstown, the town has chosen one of the most restrictive data sharing policies, absence, not sharing at all. Your department doesn't simply grant sharing to anyone and everyone, he said, telling officials the agency had only agreed to share Flock system data with other agencies that had signed memorandums of understanding, agreeing to use it in accordance with its laws and values. Information sharing with ICE. Another frequent question in the midst of a nationwide roundup of immigrants' concerns, the sharing of Flock data with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Flock does not have any contacts with ICE or with any other agency within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, said Chandler. He acknowledged that Flock does contract with the U.S. National Park Service and with the U.S. Postal Inspection Service. A post on Flock's website says Flock has no contract with ICE and federal agencies were removed from its national search network in 2025. It also says federal agencies are not part of a statewide lookup networks and are not part of the National Lookup. App helps Rhode Island shoppers to get quality food at a discount. At the end of the day, bakeries throw out their bread, grocery stores toss meat, and cafes trash muffins, while Reese Brine watches grocery prices climb. Many Americans have turned to Too Good To Go, a platform that gained 3.6 million American users in the first half of 2025 for discounted food. It's just giving everybody a better opportunity to be able to access food that they need, Brian of Providence said. Too Good To Go is an app where businesses can bag up their surplus of food from the day, sell it at a discounted price to Too Good To Go users. The result is less food in the bin, extra revenue for businesses, and a cheaper meal for the customer, the app's website reads. The founders launched the app in Denmark in 2016. It immediately gained popularity, spreading around Europe and the United Kingdom. Now, the top app is active within 21 countries across the United States, Canada, Europe, and Australia, with more than 120 million users overall and 15 million American users. According to the USA's June 2026 Food Price Outlook, food prices increased by 2.9% in 2025 and are predicted to increase 3.1% in 2026. Groceries are so expensive now, Brian observed. They said that after learning about Too Good To Go from TikTok, Brian got Too Good To Go bags from the Nitro Bar and Whole Foods Market. These bags were each around $6 and held about 14 items apiece, ranging from yogurt, parafats, to bagels, to bread. Brian said they enjoy the surprise aspect of two good-to-go bags, being able to enjoy treats from businesses, such as the Nitro Bar, at a fraction of the price, and without having to wait in line. They also feel good about helping businesses get rid of excess food. The type of two good-to-go bags offered through the app varies, and Brian said Whole Foods even offers bags filled with a variety of meat for about $10. I would love to get one of those bags so I can make food for the rest of the week, said Brian. With the elevated prices of groceries, she said, the Too Good To Go app is a great resource for Americans struggling financially. I think a lot of people will start using it more and more, Brian said. I have loved using it. Case against ex-fugitive doctor slowed, can't find a lawyer. Former fugitive Ronald Fisher, who was arrested at sea over a month ago, doesn't yet have a lawyer to represent him, and it's stopping the judicial process against him from moving forward. Fisher, who disappeared while on trial for rape more than 20 years ago, appeared in Newport County Superior Court on August 17th and said that he was seeking to retain legal counsel, but it was an ongoing process. He said that his private attorney from 23 years ago, Dana Harrell, is now working as a public defender in Washington County and cannot represent him, but has been very helpful and has been sending attorneys to the adult correctional institutions to speak with him. The issue is money, he indicated. Do you have funding, sir? Asked Associate Justice William E. Carnes, Jr. I do, Fisher replied. It's a question of access. Carnes said he was aware that Fisher's accounts had been frozen and would refer him to the public defender's office. I have to move this along, he said, telling Fisher he would need to appear back in court on August 24th. Jan Hilfer, son of one of Fisher's victims, said after the hearing that he and his family are a little concerned that Mr. Fisher continues to play games with the judicial system. He's had 23 years to find an attorney, he said. Fisher was on trial for raping Hilfer's mother, Cheryl Gingrich, when he fled in 2005. Hilfer questioned why he was out on bail and able to flee in the first place. We have concerns, and the reason we have concerns is that this man was let off on a $1,000 bail, said Hilfer. We hope the leniency doesn't continue. Hilfer said his family wants to see Fisher sentenced to a full life sentence. We don't want any opportunity for parole, he said. Every day he gets outside of a jailhouse, that's the day he can assault another woman. Fisher has been publicly accused of raping multiple women before his disappearance in 2005. Two of those cases led to criminal charges. Gingrich has also filed a civil lawsuit against Fisher. A hearing for a preliminary injunction in the case is scheduled for August 20th. Hilfer said that it was surprising Fisher had been able to hide for so long, that the family hasn't been able to get clarity on what kind of assets he might have under false names. He very purposefully moved his assets around to hide them, he said. He's been planning this for 21 years. He knows where his money is, but I don't know if anyone else has a full picture of where it is. Today in history. Today is Thursday, August 20th. On this day in 1619, on or about this day, 20 and odd kidnapped Angolans arrived on a Dutch ship at the English colony of Jamestown, Virginia, to be forced into servitude. It was widely regarded as the beginning of African slavery in the United States. The voyage started with 350 captives. Almost all died or were kidnapped a second time by pirates. 1858, Charles Darwin co-published the first outline of the theory of evolution. Published along with fellow scientist Alfred Russel Wallace, who had shared with Darwin his own independent work on the subject, it was met with little fanfare. Darwin developed the theory further, and the following year he published the landmark book On the Origins of Species. 1866, the National Labor Union was founded in Baltimore and called on Congress to mandate an 8-hour workday, the first such demand. Although the group did not succeed and folded only 7 years later, it raised public awareness and birthed the American Federation of Labor. 1911, the first commercial telegram was sent around the world. The message left the New York Times building in New York City at 7 p.m. and was received 16 minutes later after traveling through 16 relays via the Azores, Gibraltar, India, Hawaii, and San Francisco. It read, "This message sent around the world." 1940, Leon Trotsky was fatally attacked in his Mexico City home by a Spanish communist wielding an ice axe. He died the next day. The Russian Revolution leader had been living in exile for 11 years. The Soviet government said it was not responsible, though that was widely doubted. 1954, President Dwight D. Eisenhower approved a National Security Council paper, throwing support behind Ngo Dinh Diem, who had been appointed Prime Minister of Vietnam, soon South Vietnam. The goal of the support was to restore U.S. prestige in Southeast Asia and to prevent further losses to communism. 1960, the first live animals returned to Earth from a trip to space. The Soviet Sputnik 5 carried mutts, Belka and Strelka, 40 mice and 2 rats. Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev later sent one of Stretka's puppies to First Lady Jackie Kennedy. Though it was a propaganda hero, Laika, a first dog in space, had been sent on a one-way mission. In last pre-primary debate, McKee demands folks respect this office. Democratic candidates for governor Dan McKee and Helena Foulkes tangled on the debate stage for the final time, Tuesday, August 18th. Taking swings at each other on opioids, the Washington Bridge, and what they see as each other's failings. "Respect this office. I am the governor of the state of Rhode Island," McKee said after folks told him to stop speaking over her as the debate became contentious in discussions over housing and economic development. The debate, hosted by WPRI-TV and held at Rhode Island College, is the last televised forum before the September 9th Democratic primary. It covered a broad range of topics, from financial trouble at casino companies Bally's to 38 studios, but the candidates returned to familiar attacks on each other. Foulkes is leading in the polls, and the morning of the debate, Salve Regina University's Pell Center released a new poll showing her with a 20-point lead. Candidates challenge each other on housing, jobs, and economic development. Tempers flared after the candidates challenged each other's housing and job numbers. Foulkes argued that McKee's oft-repeated boast of creating 37,000 jobs since taking office mostly reflects the fact he became governor while the state was emerging from COVID lockdown and gaining back the jobs lost to the pandemic. In calling his housing creation record underwhelming, folks pointed out that a chunk of the homes he has taken credit for were preserved, not new units. He responded that in her last prominent public sector role on the state's Economic Development Corporation during the Great Recession, she walked away after the 38 studios deal went south. "You keep on disparaging the state of Rhode Island every single chance you get," said McKee. You're not a cheerleader for this state. Look, I was a job creator, and I want to continue to create jobs. You're a job killer, and you didn't have the courage to stand, as other people did when we needed you the most. I'm certainly not disparaging the state of Rhode Island. I am disparaging its governor, responded Folks. I am the state of Rhode Island, McKee asserted. He is not a job creator. We are the 50th in the country right now, Folks said, referencing back to CNBC's low ranking of Rhode Island in its list of top states for businesses. What about Folks' role in the opioid crisis? Folks has been defending CVS's role selling painkillers since she announced her first campaign in 2022. How does she explain why CVS continued filling prescriptions from doctors flagged by pharmacists and investigators for suspected pill mill operations? We cut off over 600 pill mill doctors. I can't speak to anyone in particular, she said. I wish that we could cut off even more. I will say that. Anytime you're living through a crisis like this, there's more you want to do. I think every day about the families that are affected by this. I think it's atrocious that this governor is politicizing this issue, because I think for many in the recovery community, they don't want their personal tragedy being made into politics. McKee again predicted that Folks will eventually become ensnared in a Department of Justice lawsuit against CVS over opioids. Look, they presumed the pharmacist to fill orders that they shouldn't be filling, he said. That's right in the report. She's not going to apologize for her behavior in this area, and she's not going to come to terms with the fact she hurt a lot of people, including the people at CVS. That's all we have for today. Thanks for joining me, and have a wonderful week ahead.